Mr. President, with the current value of the dollar, do you think it's declined too much?
No, I think it's great.
Donald Trump believes that a weaker U.S. currency would favor the development of U.S. manufacturing sector.
Tariff policy has created risk about the status of trade with the USA.
The dollar's got enough reasons to decline on its own.
Confidence in the dollar and U.S. stability is beginning to crack. And if it breaks, you are going to be the one that pays for it first.
And rather than reacting to the horrors of World War II, we're now reacting to the horrors of a world in which the whims of Donald Trump determine what happens and what doesn't happen.
Tariffs as leverage, financial infrastructure as coercion, supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited. We are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition.
We can't trust America not to elect somebody like Donald Trump again in the future. I normally avoid watching the World Economic Forum like the plague because I just expect platitudes, boring speeches and nonsense to come out of everybody. But I was quite surprised by the speech by Mark Carney, where he actually laid down the truth about the situation we find ourselves in globally and how we got there. Let's have a quick listen to Mark Carney here.
We knew the story of the international rules-based order was partially false, that the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient, that trade rules were enforced asymmetrically. International law applied with varying rigor depending on the identity of the accused or the victim. This fiction was useful. Open sea lanes, a stable financial system, collective security, and support for frameworks for resolving disputes. So we placed the sign in the window. We participated in the rituals, and we largely avoided calling out the gaps between rhetoric and reality. This bargain no longer works. Let me be direct. We are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition. You cannot live within the lie of mutual benefit through integration when integration becomes the source of your subordination.
Now that's a huge admission. He's quite right. There's no way that the current system can continue for a whole host of reasons. But one of the obvious ones is you certainly can't trust Donald Trump. But can you trust America? America's thrown up this creature. America has broken the rules of a system that it imposed in the first place. So you can't rely upon the Americans anymore after this event, whether Trump wins the next election or not, to bring about a reform system that doesn't have the flaws that Carney has identified so well in the dishonest foundations of the international system, because, as he said, the whole idea that it was a rule-based system was specious because the rules were applied selectively. There was a dominant party in the whole thing called the United States of America. All this stuff has now been exposed and shown as failing. We have one person who we can thank for the situation we're currently in, and as it happens, it's not Donald Trump. It's this guy, Harry Dexter White. Now, if you're wondering who the hell Harry Dexter White is, he was the chief member of the American delegation to Bretton Woods, which is where the post-war financial architecture was designed. And he was a bureaucrat inside the American government, but in the circumstances of World War II at the end, he was the dominant member of that delegation. And there were two proposals on the table at Bretton Woods. One was for the system we actually ended up with, which was Harry Dexter White's proposal, and that would replace the British pound with the American dollar for international trade and link the American dollar to gold so that if you tendered 1 ounce of gold to the American Treasury, they had to give you $35 and vice versa. With $35, you could buy 1 ounce of gold. That's obviously not the case anymore. Now, that system started breaking down at the time of Nixon. So we went to a dual standard where the official price was $35 and the market price was $42. And then the holding to gold was broken. And then we've been through financial crises after financial crisis. Carney's saying we have a stable financial system. That's the only part of that particular segment of the speech that I think is a joke. Because, of course, we had the financial crisis in 2007. That was not the first. It was the last of a whole series of crises. We had in 1987, there was a stock market boom and bust where the market fell 20% in one day. We then had the Russian financial crisis, the Asian financial crisis, and then finally the subprime financial crisis and the breakdown of the monetary system globally in what we call the global financial crisis. All those elements would not have necessarily happened if we had taken the system that was the alternative system on the table at the Bretton Woods Agreement, and that was put forward by John Maynard Keynes. Now, you might think Keynes is a socialist lefty, and obviously what was put forward by the capitalist American had to be superior. There's a slight twist there. It appears that Harry Dexter White was giving secrets to the Soviets. So there's no clean red, left versus right line you can draw down here. It's a question of whose proposal was more sustainable over time. And in that basis, Keynes's proposal was more sustainable because the point that Keynes focused upon was the previous system enabled countries to run large trade surpluses or large trade deficits without any limitation on their behaviour in that front. If you had countries running large trade deficits, they were forced to devalue their currency, to reduce domestic demand, to try to export more to make up the balance. All the cost of adjustment fell on the trade deficit country. What Keynes proposed was we should have a new system in where the burden was shared so that both deficit countries and surplus countries in terms of trade were penalised to encourage them not to deviate too far from balanced trade with the rest of the world. So his argument was that where there's a want of balance in trade dealings, so that imports of some countries are much greater than their exports and the exports of other countries much greater than their imports, the pressure of adjustment should not fall, as it has in the past, almost wholly on the weaker country, the debtor. So Keynes wanted a system where both the trade surplus and trade deficit countries were constrained by the new rules. We should like to have a setup which made it just as much the duty of the creditor country as of the debtor country to ensure a proper balance. That's what Keynes was proposing. And he hoped that the goodwill that existed globally after the horror of the Great Depression, of World War II, of seeing the extermination camps when they were discovered, he thought that all this would lead to people agreeing to a fairer system to avoid the elements of the previous international system which helped contributed to the rise of the Nazis. But an arrogant American got in the way. How unusual is that? And that arrogant American was Harry Dexter White. Why were they arrogant? Well, one of the reasons they were arrogant is that, of course, at the end of World War II and during World War II itself, the United States was a massive trade surplus nation. There was the cash and carry program that enabled the British to fight the Germans, but they had to pay for the goods later that they fought the Germans with. You had the incredible growth of the manufacturing sector that had begun in the 1870s in America, continuing on permanently. So in that situation, the American delegation thought, we're running a trade surplus. We don't want to be controlled. Let's just replace the British pound for international trade with the American dollar. That's what we got. Now, what you see, what the impact of that was over time, you see that this is actually what led America to running massive trade deficits. So in the period from the 1800s through to the 1870s, when America was building up its industrial power, for most of that period of time, America ran a trade deficit of about 2% of GDP. Then their industrialization really took off, and from the 1870s through to the end of World War II and the beginning of the post-war period, America's running trade surpluses, sometimes massive, over 6% of GDP, but on normal about a 1% of GDP trade surplus. But once American dollar became the international currency, that meant its dollar was overvalued because you needed the American dollar not just to buy American goods, but to buy goods from anywhere in the world. That's the basis of being the international currency. Now, the attitude of countries that do this is that we're the strongest country on the planet. I'm doing a Trump dance here. How strange. We're the strongest country. Our currency should be used for international trade. Now, that's seeing becoming the reserve currency for the planet as a spoil of empire. But it's not a spoil of empire. It's a spoiler of empires, because this is a process which sets up to undermine the empire over time. And the basic story is that no country has become an empire by invading other countries with weapons they imported from a third country. You make your own weapons, you've got a new form of technology, that means you can dominate your rivals and you replace the previous empire. And when you do that, you make the mistake of saying, ah, we're the empire, we're going to use our currency globally. Our currency will be the one on which the sun never sets. Now, that to actually get to that situation in the first instance, you've got to have manufacturers who can invent the weapons and produce the weapons, which means you beat all your rivals and you become the dominant power. So the strong manufacturing sector is a critical part of becoming a global empire. Now, once you are an empire, you make the mistake of making your currency the currency for international trade, then your currency is overvalued. So your manufacturing sector is priced out because your currency is too highly valued because of its role for international trade. You weaken your manufacturing sector. Now, in that situation, one of the vassal nations that you previously defeated is going to develop its own manufacturing capability. With that strong manufacturing capability, it can build weapons that can take you on and defeat you, and then they become the new empire, and the whole process repeats itself again. And you can see this in history. One reason this I call this a curse of capitalist empires rather than empires in general is that capitalism relies upon buying and selling of goods. Basically, commerce drives everything rather than legal rules. The Romans would never have allowed this to happen to themselves because they were just not let a Servian country build its own weapons to defeat the Roman Empire. But with capitalism, because you can buy and sell what you want, that buying and selling process can undermine the strength of your own manufacturing sector. So it's a particularly a curse of capitalist nations. The way the Dutch lost out to the English lost out to the Americans, and now the Americans are losing out to the Chinese. Being the global reserve currency is not a spoil of empire, it's a spoiler of empires. And I believe that Keynes was aware of that and didn't want that curse of capitalist empires to come back in the post-war period, but he couldn't win the argument against Harry Dexter White because Harry used American exceptionalism to ride roughshod over the possibility that the countries at the end of World War II might agree to a neutral system that didn't lead to the damage that's done to the whole world when you have a domestic currency used for international trade. Now, the impact on that of America over time was to make its manufacturing sector uncompetitive. You lost out to imports, and at the same time as well, can't ignore this factor, American capitalists were quite happy to shift production offshore to exploit lower wages offshore and to get a higher profit share for themselves. So this was a double betrayal of the American working class. Being the reserve currency set them up on the usual course of destruction that applied to previous empires, but at the same time, their capitalists were quite happy to shift production offshore in a way that wasn't possible in previous centuries, and that also undermined the American working class. Their factories turned to rust, the jobs disappeared, they got crummy jobs in their place, and in that process as well, the Democrats shot themselves in the foot because they convinced themselves that manufacturing was passé. Let's ship the manufacturing off to third world countries, let's grow the services sector, that'll be America's power and strength, and the services sector fundamentally means the financial sector. As much as we can blame Trump for the current political chaos, the Democrats were the ones who set this up because Bill Clinton in 1999 repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. It was there to restrain the bad behavior of the financial sector. You can see him surrounded by representatives of the financial class rather than the working class. And then we had Obama in the aftermath of the global financial crisis that to a large degree was set up by abolishing Glass-Steagall. He's surrounded by a representative of the financial class once more in picking up the ruins of the American economy after the global financial crisis. So the Democrats effectively abandoned the working class. There was a time when, if you're a union member, you voted Democrat. Now the unions have gone, and the sons and daughters of those union members no longer vote for the Democrats. They vote for the Republicans. The Republicans exploited this collapse, and the greatest exploiter of all, of course, is Donald Trump. Now, if we hadn't had the mistake of using the American dollar for international trade, if Keynes's idea had been used, we would not necessarily have got to this situation in the first place. So in many ways, Harry Dexter White gave birth to Donald Trump. Our mistakes go right back to that stage. Now, the thing is, we're now in a post-Trump period. And rather than reacting to the horrors of World War II, we're now reacting to the horrors of a world in which the whims of Donald Trump determine what happens and what doesn't happen. And that is so disturbing to politicians like Mike Carney and many other of his fellow delegates at Davos. There's a possibility, I'm not going to hold my breath, but there's a possibility that they might say, let's avoid this process repeating itself. Let's not have an international currency for international trade. Let's take Keynes's idea of a neutral unit of account to be used for international trade and put that into process. And what Keynes had in mind was fundamentally national currencies are used for national commerce, a unit of account which is not created by any country and in fact which sums to zero overall is used for international trade. So if you look at buying and selling goods in the American economy, you use the American dollar. If you have people buying the buyer banking with one bank and the seller banking with another, then there's a transfer of reserves between those institutions, again, American currency denominated. At the level of the central bank is then a member of what's called the International Clearing Union, what Keynes called Bancor, which I'm suggesting we should rename the Terra to remind ourselves that despite our differences, we share the same planet. And if we don't work out how to cooperate, we're going to probably drive ourselves extinct. If you had a consumer who wanted to buy China's goods, what's necessary is the American dollar gets converted to terra at the International Clearing Union. That therefore means the United States balance at the International Clearing Union goes down, the Chinese balance goes up by precisely as much, and then that money is transferred to the seller, the Chinese manufacturer, to make that transfer occur. So you could have a neutral currency up here. And an essential element of Keynes's design of the bankor system was that the sum of all outstanding bankor, and I'm not saying we should say the sum of all terra, is zero. We have a unit of account that you have to use for international trade, where if your country runs a trade surplus, you claim accumulate a positive balance at the International Clearing Union. And if you run a deficit, you claim accumulate a negative balance, and the sum of the two is zero. But on top of that, Keynes also wanted to limit just how large those deficits and surpluses got to be. So he proposed a penalty rate of interest would be imposed on positive and negative balances at the International Clearing Union beyond a threshold. We could take the same proposal now, amplify it, because it could have floating interest rates. The higher the trade deficit, the higher the trade surplus, the higher the interest rate you pay. And that penalizes countries running sustained surpluses or sustained trade deficits and pushes us back to a situation where trade deficits and surpluses are relatively small compared to national economies. That could have prevented a large number of the financial instabilities that have ruled the post-war economic system. A fairly simple outline of how the whole process would work. Of course, we know at the moment America's running a huge trade deficit and China's running a huge trade surplus. So the way that actually happens, it would happen in this system. If you want to import goods, Chinese goods into America, you use American dollars to pay for them. That means your deposit accounts go down. Those deposit accounts cause your reserves to fall. Those reserves falling actually increases, believe it or not, the equity of the central bank, but it requires them then to use that, to then match that by converting the American dollars into terra, so that up at this stage they can transfer those terra to the Chinese system, and then the Chinese system pays those terra back into its central bank, and they then swap from terra to yuan, and yuan ends up in the account of the buyer. It's the same basic structures you have now, only what's called International Clearing Union would take the place of the international money markets, the transfer of American dollars from one account to another, and therefore changes in domestic money distribution around the world. It's a feasible system. It's something, if you did it, you wouldn't have the curse of empire being passed on from the Americans to the Chinese. And I hope that the Chinese will live up to their reputation of thinking for the long term, because if they look at history, they can see the same pattern. The last thing China should want to do is take the place of the Americans. We obviously are at a juncture point, as Carney said. We can't continue on with the current system. Not only can we not trust Donald Trump, we can't trust America not to elect somebody like Donald Trump again in the future. So the whole idea that you can rely upon the American dollar as the basis of international trade has been destroyed. And with some luck, in the aftermath of Trump's impact on the global economy, there's some possibility that rather than the goodwill trains hope would bring about a neutral financial system after World War II, we'll have people who never want to experience Donald Trump again, and they don't want to experience the damage that a national currency does when it's used for international trade as well. So I'm not going to hold my breath, but there's some hope that out of this chaos, we might finally have got the system that we should have got at Bretton Woods.
Now, if this finally made economics feel clearer instead of more confusing, if that resonates with you, you're probably like the 22,000 others who recently requested one of my three books inside my new Rebel Economist book bundle. The bundle is worth $50, but you can get it while it's free this week. Click the link in the description or go to stevekeen.com. Once there, click on the black button, enter your email, and in about 60 seconds, we'll email you free access. After that, if you want to study with me personally with live lectures each week and use the proprietary tool you saw me use in this video called Revel, there'll be an optional invite to apply and join my private group of like-minded economic rebels. Again, that's stevekeen.com or click the link in the description.